Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
All right, IL Preps Nation, how we doing here? This is the start of our first fall series, and ultimately we will recap a bit more, but we are fresh off of a weekend in which your three hosts here, myself, Dan Abern, and Kevin Brown, were scattered across this great country, and we are excited to recap it all. And then on the backside of our conversation, we also have Face Off Academy representatives Greg Renlian and Corey Bolkin, who will join us to recap the Face Off Academy National Showcase. And we go for about an hour. It's an awesome conversation, so stick around and make sure you catch all of this episode in its glory. First things first, let's check in with the boys. Kevin, you kick us off here. How was your weekend? Smooth travels. What was the best meal you had?
Fantastic. Thanks for asking. It's great to be here with you both, recapping our weekends here all across this great country. Down in Texas, sometimes you get Chick-fil-A, sometimes you get some other things for lunch. We got some nice brisket sandwiches, which hit different. Very well done from Prime Time. Send that up. I was down at the Lone Star Cup down in Arlington, Texas. It was proud of the way a lot of these gritty recruits brave the weather, brave the rainy conditions. It was muddy. It was gritty. I loved it. And they got after it, man. It was great to see. I was mainly focused on the 27, 28s were mostly mixed in the high school B division. There was a high school A division. Both divisions end up with Texas Nationals taking it home. Congrats to the Texas Nationals. Number of guys I'll get to. But yeah, that was pretty much the weekend. And showcase on Friday night as well was super cool to be at. Some cold conditions there as well, but The boys got after it, and some elite coaching from all over the place. So they got better, and it was a nice little party starter, a nice little appetizer for the Saturday and Sunday action.
Love it. I'm excited to hear all about it and all about those gritty conditions. Avern, you were headed to nicer weather. Tell us a little bit about your weekend.
Yeah, so I was in Las Vegas, or Henderson, Nevada, technically, for the Adrenaline Blackjack Classic.
Did you make your way into Vegas?
I did not hit the strip, but we were staying in a really nice resort that, you know, had a casino, a lot of nice restaurants. So I kind of got a little bit of the Vegas experience. But, you know, getting out of the airport, you could see the strip right away. I saw the Sphere within a minute. But next time I'm going to explore a little bit more, I think.
Awesome. All right. Well, I myself was not a massive traveler. I was just up 95 into...
You're in Delaware.
Yeah, to the great state of Delaware. Kevin Brown, you can testify to that. But I was at best in class. And so, like I said, between the three of us, we were scattered pretty good. I got out of my car on Sunday morning, and the first human being that I spoke to that day was a dad in the parking lot, and was like, "Man, you guys are everywhere, huh?" I was like, "Yeah, you know, we try to be." And I thought it was pretty cool. Like that Saturday, we were all at different times uploading different stuff to the IL Prep story. And so quite literally, you got like a decent feel for, you know, that geographical footprint just as you kind of scrolled through that. But yeah, so let's transition and let's talk some standouts, right? That's why the people come. That's why we go around. We are always working to find the best standouts and working to find some players to evaluate and, you know, working to find some uncovered gems, so to speak. And I feel like with some of these tournaments in the Midwest and some of these tournaments out West, you know, that's where a lot of those lie. So I'm really excited to hear from you guys about, you know, who you guys left there most impressed with. Let's start with Kevin. Dan and I will ask you a few questions here about your time at the Lone Star Cup. Let's start off with that Friday showcase. I know you had to make some last minute adjustments to make sure the travel worked out and make sure you got some flights there. So shout out to you for making that work, getting there. And what was the fruit of that labor, my friend?
Yeah, shout out Southwest. Shout out to the showcase. Once it got underway, it was awesome, man.
I've said this once, and I'll say it again. Josh Davey really dropped the ball when he didn't land that wheels up deal back in 2019.
Well, only the real ones know that reference, and I am not one of them, apparently. So, moving on to my Lone Star Cup showcase. A lot of guys were balling out. Guy like, when you go over to the Texas Nationals 26 roster, this guy, Rocco Renda, a little lefty, yeah. LSM action. He was picking up everything. He was going everywhere, all over the field. His teammate, I'm not sure if on the showcase they were teammates, but Carter Sutton, a midfielder in that 26 group, is super athletic, dynamic, really powerful, and just a guy that jumps out at you as soon as you look at that field and you're watching from the sideline. He just plays with a lot of energy and, quite frankly, almost had the golden night on Friday night when he had a little shimmy down the righty alley and Owen Duffy-esque behind the back attempt. Went just wide, but commend you for the attempt. Overall, though, the best player all weekend I saw was Harrison Brown. Lefty attackman, super slick out of Highland Park. You can tell that he got a lot of good experience. Kaplan, I think you'll know better than me what kind of contributions he made this spring, but
yeah,
he played with a lot of confidence.
Yeah, so he's, to my knowledge, and I could be wrong on this, I believe he ended the season starting at attack, but early in the year was kind of inverting and playing on that second line. But he was an impact player for their varsity this year. 2027, right, Kev?
Yeah, 2027, which is a big deal coming in as a freshman, not now a sophomore.
Yeah.
In the fall here. Just, he's playing with so much confidence after that breakout spring that he was picking apart defenses. Normally, when you get to this age group and you start to see guys really getting into their recruiting cycle, they're still, you know, focused on themselves, focused on beating their man one-on-one, dodging. Harrison was such a three-level scorer and passer that it was just so impressive the way he kept his head up at all times. Backed away from pressure.
He was a Showtime All-Star this summer, too. I saw him there as well. He's fantastic.
Yeah, crossfield dimes all weekend long. Yeah. He was providing, and when you didn't respect him, he had that sweep to the jump shot, and it was working for him. So Harrison Brown, shout out you, my namesake. Let's go Browns! And Max Say, he showed some dynamic partnerships with him on the offensive end, and I'll get to a couple defensive guys before you cut me off here, but. Listen, this other lefty, Mason Love, is the lefty show for the Texas Nationals 27 champs, and he was doing it all from the high slot with some risers and a lot of wing dodges working off Harrison Brown on that left wing. It was super awesome. And defensively, real quick here, just Griffin Hamner, really physical presence at close defense, and he's pretty versatile. Know him. He's getting a lot of football interest. He's a defensive end down there at Cornerstone Christian down in Texas there, and he is getting a lot of good looks, but apparently he wants to play both sports at the next levels. Guys,
that's some good background research there.
Reach out to Drake Carroll.
Nice. I love it. All right, and we'll come back and ask you a few more questions, maybe some stock risers or some guys that you thought really brought it in the mud or things like that. But let's shift gears. We'll head back out that towards Vegas. Abern, give us some initial thoughts and some initial standouts from your time out there. And the way that I worded this to Greg and Corey later in the episode was kind of that like first guy when you sit down, and for you it was the plane, for them, you know, when their butt hits the car seat and they're getting ready to drive home, the first few guys that they kind of think back and they're like, oh, wow, those guys like kind of stole the show.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys I can talk about. I think overall, you know, this tournament featured a lot of kids from the West Coast or just Western lacrosse in general. A few local teams from Vegas, but then you got, you know, Vance, RC, who are from California. You've got Utah teams, Team Illinois, and teams from Oregon and Washington. So a lot of West Coast teams here. So, you know, players that I'm not all too familiar with already, And I think just overall, I thought that the 2025 division was really competitive. It was really great. It featured a lot of 26s who were actually playing up. So we kind of got to see how some of these kids play when they're put into a much more difficult environment. You know, I think the first player that comes to top my head as probably the best player I saw all weekend was Stu Gates. He's going to Dartmouth. He played for Fog City, which is basically, it's about 80% of that team is made up of St. Ignatius Prep, which is a, Northern California powerhouse. I'm just really impressed with him. I think that, all Ivy League team is in his future. He's just can really do everything right, really well. He's very accurate with shooting the ball. He's very athletic. He has all the tools. But I think what impressed me most about his performance over the weekend was just like his decision making and his ability to kind of adapt. Really, whatever the team needed him to be, he was doing it all weekend, whether that was a facilitator, a guy who can just score, or even a guy who could take a back seat and let other guys take some of the shine. So he's the guy who like immediately comes to mind. And then, I think other players that I thought really played well were Mackie Malkiel, who's playing for Team Oregon. He's a 2026. He's got a brother who's committed to Princeton. Tremendous burst, really good shooting the ball, and was just a guy who was taken all over. Who was taken over all weekend. And then, honestly, two goalies from the West who are going to Western powerhouses. Matthew McCain, who's a goalie committed to play at Notre Dame. I thought, wow, like this is a great player. So looking forward to Notre Dame. They've got guys who can replace Liam Entman in the coming years. And then Rhett King, who's going to Denver. I thought he was really fantastic. He was playing for Utah Summit. And it just kind of like settled into my mind that, Denver's going to be in a good spot defensively with him possibly holding down the cage. There's a lot of guys I can go into, but those are the initial thoughts on, what transpired in Vegas.
Perfect. Let's hold those initial thoughts right there. And I'll just add a little bit of quick insight. Stu Gates, Matty McCain, both recent selections in our most updated top 100 select recruiting rankings for the 2025 class. And then Rhett King was a guy that we knew of a bit through the process. We have him as a 3-star in the 2026 class and is one that popped for me this summer at the New Balance Games where he came out and was the goalie for the West team and really helped anchor them. And he was one of those guys that I don't know if you guys remember, but that was a team that lost the first two games and then went undefeated or like went on a got really hot and ended up winning it. So I credit him with at least a piece of that. And I think that's kind of it. Like if he gets hot and when he gets hot, he is really one of the better goalies in the class for sure. Kev, let's shift back. I like this. We're going to keep bouncing back and forth. We're jumping on planes. Let's go back. You said that it was messy, it was muddy, it was, a bit ugly out there in terms of the weather and conditions, obviously all uncontrollable, but you said that the kids were bringing the juice and bringing the energy despite that. Who kind of pops to you as a guy that, and this is important, right? Like, playing college lacrosse is, it's not all sunshine, right? It's not all so fun and games. You're going to have some ugly, sloppy days where you're going to have to manufacture some energy or you're going to have to bring the juice anyways. And so really it is kind of a good insight into that second tier of, the kid can play, but, when things aren't perfect conditions out there, like what's his body language? So Kev, take it from here. Give us a few guys that you kind of thought really brought it in terms of the hustle, the energy, and the juice.
Yeah, absolutely. A guy who was really the co-star of that 27 division kind of led his impulse team to that championship game against Texas Nationals. And it was cool, right? It was just following this division, it's kind of the two best offensive players going head-to-head in this Clive Kimbrough, number 98 on impulse. It really brought it with just what you were asking about, that hustle factor. Rain really started to pick up most towards the end of Saturday gameplay and continued to start Sunday morning. And that's when he kind of thrived. He was riding back. He was causing havoc, causing chaos, and causing turnovers and scoring some easy buckets off him. And when you weren't ready, he was split dodging and rolling and scoring some low angle head fakes, and similar to Harrison Brown, his vision really stood out. He was playing with his head up, he was manipulating the slides, and his lead passes, along with teammate Gus Griffin, They really worked off well together, and they had some of those Asher Nolting, Marcus Holman kind of slips behind X that they were working on. Some picked the middle guy on extra man, and Gus would come down and score the quick stick, and that's when you kind of saw the passion in that title game. Clive Kimbrough, a little fist bump, he was fired up and bring that passion when it was actually the sun did start to come out at that point. But to your point, he did bring energy all throughout the weekend. So shout out Clive and shout out Gus on that impulse team, because that was a fun game to follow.
I'll open up. Dan, you got any questions for Kev?
I just would say, you know, what did you really kind of focus on over the weekend? Which division perhaps, or, you know, set of teams, and what was your main takeaway from how the competition played out over the weekend?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Mainly the high school A and B, so the 26s and that A group, and then the younger kids and the 27s, 28s group together, and that B division. Just everyone brought the energy. There's a Impulse 25 team there, so there's still 25 kids still trying to get recruited from D2, D2, D3. Coaches on the sidelines littered all throughout the weekend. A guy like Zeke Terry, just a lefty finisher, man. Like, he was pretty on it. Elijah Terry just didn't come off the field. Like, a two-way midfielder. Real gritty. Listen, he's wearing sweatpants, but everyone's wearing sweatpants. He kind of had to wear sweatpants in that mud, you know, slide around and get in there. But not to discredit anything, because if you're wearing shorts, you're definitely pretty gritty. Sweatpants still worked out in his favor, because he was really bringing it too. I would just say the overall gameplay, I was really impressed with how well guys were bringing the intensity defensively. In particular, the two slide might have not always been there, but the on-ball pressure defense and going after some loosies here and there. Goalie play was also very good. Saving high shots, getting the clearing game going was a challenge with some of those conditions. But again, just... really commend the effort down there in Texas for all that grit.
And then I want to pose the same question to you, Dan. Like, what was the format? Was it a championship or play day style? And who did you spend the most time watching?
Yeah, well, shout out to the organizers, because they actually scheduled the 2026s in the morning and the times in the afternoon. So I was able to really focus on both and get to know and really just get in depth with a lot of those teams and those players. I mostly focused on the AA division. The divisions were actually pretty small, only like 4, 5, or 6 teams, depending on the age group. But it was a lot of the same teams littered throughout those divisions. Like, Advance had a team. I think I'm pretty sure Advance won every single, a form of an Advance team won every single championship. Yeah. They basically had, you know, group play on Saturday and then immediately went into playoffs on Sunday. And I think kind of like the small amount of games made for a really ultra competitive atmosphere. And it kind of felt like every game mattered, you know. So that's what I would say I focused on. But at the end of the day, too, I was also able to catch some 2027s and was really surprised at just how good some of those guys were. So, yeah, that's how I kind of spent the weekend.
Perfect. That seems like a really good spot to start. 2027 standouts. I am of two beliefs. One, that as we will hear pretty shortly, that the faceoff class in the 2027 division is pretty deep, but also that the goalie class in the 2027 class is really, really deep as well. So did any goalies in that class kind of stand out to you through the weekend?
Well, it's funny you asked. The champions themselves were super strong right down the middle there. Just the on faceoffs, please, Owen, excuse me if I mispronounce your last name here, but Lazuski, I'm going to go with, was pretty dominant, quick with his hands, one to himself. When he recognized that it was maybe not the best matchup he was going against, he brought out that kind of face dodge, or not the face-off win to swim move. Maneuver that kind of always goes viral when you see it, and it's captured well. He was pretty awesome. Goalie Connor Dugan on that Texas Nationals team as well. I was really happy with how much talk he was delivering to his defense. Like, Griffin, like, who's got this guy? Where's the two slide? And he's like, yeah, man, I don't know. Sorry about that. Sometimes you just got to reorganize and reshape. So he had some great offside hip saves, some good low saves, exploded well, get to his feet, and he was nice and secure with the ball in his stick. But Cap, the turntables, let's shift things towards
We're shifting away from Abram. I feel like he was itching to answer that question as well about the 2027s.
That's a premature shift from Kevin here. Abram, let's go to you.
Yeah, so, you know, two guys I'll shout out who I thought really, really, really stood out this weekend in the 2027 group was David Sala from Advance, kind of like an attack / midfielder. Just an absolute sniper, a kid who's got, you know, shooting ability that goes what's up beyond what I see from most of his peers. Just was delivering beautiful shots all throughout the weekend. And then a kid named Connor Ganshaw from Team Illinois, who was actually playing up with the 26s, you know, just a huge kid. Like, you know, it's like the first reaction you get is like, there's no way that this kid's a 2027. But yeah, he's big, he's fast, has a ton of power to his game. And you can kind of tell that he's still grown into his body. He's got a little baby fat on him. So it's like he's still got a lot of physical development to go. I just thought he was awesome. Like, just made big plays and big moments on the 2016. Yeah, he's definitely a kid we're going to want to look at, you know, throughout the rest of his high school years.
Love it. All right, Kevin.
He's tracking if he's still got that baby fat.
What?
I'm going to be keeping track if he's still got that baby fat. That's what I'm going to be looking out for.
He's going to shed it and be a monster, and you're going to regret saying that on the podcast.
Yeah, this will motivate him.
All right, now I think you can shift. Do we have any more words from either the Lone Star Cup or Adrenaline Blackjack Classic, right,
Dan? Yeah, Blackjack. Oh, I mean, there's plenty of guys I can still shout out, like I thought.
All right, let's go through it. Let's rapid fire, hit a few more standouts. And then after that, anybody that you miss in this segment, the people are just going to have to wait until you get the pen to paper and put out some standouts and some evaluations. But I feel like you've done a good job so far of hitting a good handful.
Yeah, you know, I think, like I said, the 25 group was really competitive. I thought the RC Elite team and the Utah Summit team, they both just littered with outstanding players. A couple guys I'll shout out. And I thought Tommy McCool had a really great weekend for RC Elite. Ross Jacobson, who's a 2026 playing up. Big tons of plays throughout the weekend. And then Garrett Ipp, who I assume is, you know, Logan Ipp's brother. He currently goes to Harvard. I think he's a team captain for this upcoming season. He was fantastic, super quick, a lot of the same qualities that made his brother stand out when he was going through the recruiting process. He was listed as uncommitted, but apparently he's going to be going to Williams. I think that they're going to get a great player in him. On the Advanced 2025 team, you had a guy named Colin Krieger, who really just blew up in the championship game. I think he had 3 goals and 1 or 2 assists. Was really the difference maker for that team in a very close game. Advanced 2026, this is a star-studded team. You know, you got Joe Ligas, who was one of our top defenders in that 2026 class, playing with a ton of other great talent. But an uncommitted kid named Kellen Dunn, I thought probably had the most notable weekend out of all the kids who were kind of like uncommitted or lesser known on that team. I thought he played great. And then going back to that Utah Summit 2025 team.
Yeah, Sean, I'm really curious about that team. I'd like to hear more about those guys. They are one of those groups that, like, when we go through and we do the scoreboard each year, they always pop and kind of move the needle in a good way. You're like, oh, that team, you know, has some studs.
Yeah, like that's what I thought. I believe this team's coached by, you know, Will Manny and Gittleman. Yep. So they obviously getting some interesting coaching perspective there. But yeah, just a team that's loaded with studs. But I thought that Sean Jerome was kind of like their guy that they entrusted in big moments and really wanted a big weekend out of him. And I thought he played pretty well. So he's the guy I'm going to shout out on that team.
Love it. Love it. All right, boys, let's switch gears here. Let's come back to this side of the world. Best in class. It always is.
I was initially kidding, but I did see in my notes, I just did want to correct the record here that I did attribute the play of Carter Sutton during the showcase was actually his brother, Walker Sutton. So shout out, bros. You did great. Carter, you impressed me during the Lone Star Cup.
Do you have notes on both of them or just one of them? This is huge bragging rights. You can't mess this up.
No. This is what I'm correcting.
This is why you're clarifying.
Walker was great on Friday night, and then Carter was great on Saturday and Sunday.
So got I wanted it. Tenfold.
Beautiful. Let's get into the transition here into the best in class, the Wilmington, Delaware of it all. Up at Chase Fieldhouse, you were at the Deamer Classes best in class event. Dan Kaplan, take it away. Who impressed you? Who stood out? And I think we got some awards in the mix. Well, let's get those out. Let's hear them.
That's correct, Stu Griffin. We have some awards in the mix. First things first, let's start with the goalies. I thought that was one of the bigger takeaways. And I mean, really, that happens at every one of these. In each one of the committed events, I feel like the goalies kind of steal the show. But our goalie MVP was Dom Veloso, who's headed to Cornell, a Miami product that is going to be headed to the Hill School. So now he's going to get a little bit of best of the both worlds in terms of that spectrum of the coast. But he has a really unique style, really interesting style, super active in the cage. Every once in a while, he's going to get himself into trouble because he's taking a chance or something or doing something around the cage that maybe is a little bit unconventional. But he totally makes up for it with the number of plays that he makes as a result of it. He was really fun to watch. Just a really, a real athlete between the pipes, I would say. Our defensive MVP was also another Cornell-bound player, and that was John Roadhorse. And have you guys ever seen him play before? Do you guys know anything about his game?
No, this will be the first I'm hearing.
Yeah.
He's one of the most offensive players that I've seen doing the evaluations as an LSM. Just incredibly skilled going the other way. And really, it starts with the ball off the ground. So one guy that I know that both of you guys know because you saw him this summer and we've talked about him at different points is Jackson Allen. I thought Jackson Allen was right there in terms of like contending for this award. And obviously, there's a ton of talent and it's really deep. It's always one of those conversations that as they go through, like I know is really, really difficult for them to come up with each one. And I think in this instance, Jackson Allen was one of the guys that made this tough. And watching the two of them battle it out for ground balls was unbelievable. And so, as we said a couple times here already, and we have the face-off guys here next. So there weren't a ton of committed face-off guys that were at this event. So for it, they just kind of let two guys scrap it out. And a lot of times it was a pull-on-pull ground ball. And the number of times that John Roadhorse came up with it was uncanny.
Yeah. Vacuum.
Yes, absolutely. And then offensively, it was so tight that they chose to go co-MVPs. So there you had two guys. You had Khalif Hawker and you had Luke Dana, Penn State and Ohio State bound players. And Dana is a future Nittany Lion that I know their staff is really excited about. And I'm telling you, he lit the event on fire on Saturday. The first day, he was lights out. And it wasn't just like that he was scoring. Every shot he took was absolutely like pinned in the corner. It was one of the things where like the ball hit the net so hard that everybody kind of stopped and like went silent for a second and just like looked at each other. But that happened like multiple times in the same game or in the same day where it was like, oh my gosh, like he kind of needs to chill. Like this is crazy. And then the second day, the championship game was really tight. You had one team go up 6-2 at the half. The other team battled back and it became like neck and neck where they're trading goals. And then Hawker went for 3 unassisted goals, 2 left-handed, and both of them were just like smooth as could be. All 3 of the goals, like the quality of those goals were all just like kind of eyebrow raising. So he asserted himself in that moment in a way that, was pretty unbelievable and undeniable in terms of like the awards and that status. Our next one, and these are two that are not necessarily talent-based or the best player, but these were their first-class training award and the leadership and teammate award. The leadership and teammate award went to Bo Khan, who's Syracuse-bound from McDonough. I don't know if you guys have ever interacted with him, but he always is bringing the juice, bringing the energy, playing extremely hard, and is really talented on top of it. And then Quinn Langton was the first-class lacrosse training award recipient, headed to Penn. And Quinn, I thought, probably could have contended for the offensive MVP award. but just didn't quite do the same amount as what those first two guys did, which is obviously a really, really high bar. But he was still really impressive through the day and really just gets it done in a variety of ways and is really slick and finishes his opportunities and is what I would describe as a really efficient player.
Love it. Yeah, now those guys are really known commodities, most of them on the circuit as well. Just were there any combine results that stood out? Anything that...
I haven't digested them yet. People are going to have to tune into the recap. We do have them in hand, but I haven't...
A little teaser.
Yeah, it's a great teaser. Thank you for asking. There was a combine element, and just to kind of hit the format, it's combine, then it's skills and drills, and then it's... This year was the first year in which they did in a championship format.
Beautiful. Then other than that, just... Any other guys that were maybe weren't as familiar with their game that had their stock rise during this event?
Yeah, definitely. This was one where most of the guys there I was pretty familiar with. Two guys that I would say that I wasn't super familiar with. I mentioned Dom Veloso. I wasn't super familiar with him. So he was probably the largest stock riser, so to speak, of the event. The guy that, like, you know, you go from relatively unknown in our eyes to like, okay, we need to know who that is and be consistently watching him and, you know, track his progress pretty consistently. But another guy that I would say that, like, I didn't really know, and this was the first time that I had ever seen him, was Philip Businius, an attackman from Royal Bay, from Ontario, and plays for Royal Bay, that's headed to Jacksonville. Left-handed attackman, big body, good hands, but he can kind of move and can score. And he definitely, like, it doesn't take long to be like, I think that cat's Canadian or has some box to him. And it definitely shows, but he was pretty impressive and kind of the highlight that sticks out to me was in one of the games driving up to the right island, getting to that post up spot and then hitting left-handed BTB. So yeah, some slick stuff from Philip. And like I said, didn't really know his game, but was, you know, what's the Shaq quote? I'm sorry, I wasn't familiar with your game, but
yeah, wasn't familiar with the game.
Yeah. Exactly. But, you know, he can ball.
Sounds like a really interesting weekend looking at the talent-wise of that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this is one of those events where quite literally I could sit here and, I mean, I said to you guys off air, I have a note for every single kid, and I do. It's one of those events where if you evaluate with the training, then you evaluate in the games, and I was there for 2 days, like, you get to a real intimate feel for the kids, and it's one of those events that, like, from their perspective, their staff, they've done such a good job of, like, cultivating these relationships. They know the kids a little bit better, and so from our perspective, like, we can kind of soak up some of that energy and soak up some of that knowledge. And, you know, like, a guy like Matt Gill from Goalie Smith really knows all of these goalies. He knows their flaws, he knows their tendencies, he knows so much about them. So to be able to kind of soak up that is important and worthwhile.
Fantastic.
All right, anybody else got anything from our weekends? Are we ready to shift gears? All right, let's do it. An hour of face-off talk, and I'm telling you, it really does go by quick. It's not one of these, you know, Kevin Brown is over here like, what'd you guys even talk about? You enjoy every second of it. It is a great episode. I really thank those guys for joining us. We got Corey Bolkin and Greg Grenlian coming up right now. Right. And thanks so much, guys, for taking the time. As we just hit on our intro, we are now moving into our Face-Off National Showcase, Face-Off Academy National Showcase segment here. And kind of to kick things off, we have a few of our just like kind of basic questions that we hope are going to set the table a little bit for any listeners that maybe aren't super familiar with what Face-Off Academy is or what their mission is. And joining us here to talk Face-Off Academy is Greg Grenlian and Corey Bolkin. So guys, first of all, coming off of the National Showcase here this weekend, hopefully everybody had safe travels and has found some rest. I know those weekends can be grueling, but what were, you know, the very first initial takeaways when, you know, you got in the car, your butt hit the seat and you're getting ready to drive home? What were those first few thoughts that came your guys' way?
It's always just like, okay, like, we did it. You know, we're not an events company, right? But we've been doing this now. This is our 12th year. And Jerry and I sit there and we start, like, in 2 weeks, we start planning the next one. And my whole thing has always been with the National Showcase is, let's be honest. I mean, we're in the lacrosse space, which a lot of times under delivers and overprices things. And my goal as not just a former player and a coach, but also a father, is I always want the entire family to walk out of the building going, wow, that was that. We would have paid twice as much for that. That was unbelievable. And that's all I care about. So you have a really good picture of what you're bringing to the table for these families. But until it's over, and any kind of random weird thing didn't jump up, you know, like a kid's stick got stolen or someone tore an ACL or whatever the heck it might be, you leave there and you can finally like decompress. It takes me a couple of days to decompress to like be like, all right, we're done. And now I can enjoy the holidays.
Totally. And what about you, Corey? What was kind of your first initial, you know, you get through the weekend, everything plays out in front of you, and now you get some time to reflect.
Yeah. I mean, I think the one takeaway I always have is obviously Greg and Jerry are on like high alert and they're putting out like what they perceive to be fires. And then there's so many parents on the other side of things where they're just like, this is the greatest thing ever. My kid's having a blast. They just love the kind of boutique style of the event. They really enjoy, you know, that these two are not just out on a field and blowing whistles like they're kind of accustomed to seeing like all their Face-Off Academy coaches doing. So, you know, it's not very often the parents are just offering up like these congratulations and these compliments on site for this type of an event. Again, like it's pretty cool to see like how appreciative I think a lot of these families are. And the kids are so awesome too. Like there's, it's a very unique bond like all these Face-Off guys have. And you can see it, like they're all sitting there, even when they're not, you know, not on, they're not, you know, their group's not going or they're not supposed to be facing off right away. These kids are like super, super supportive. They're all like very in tune to what's going on. And there's kids that get, like, they get eliminated and they're hanging out for like two extra hours instead of just hitting the road, which is pretty unique. I think a lot of, you know, when you finish up a tournament, you don't stick around and just watch more lacrosse, you know? So everybody's happy just to hit the road and be done. So that's always the takeaway I have pretty much year over year now. But, you know, I think obviously we can get into more specifics, but it's really cool for me to be able to watch, you know, one class of guys, you know, typically the oldest group, and then kind of that up and coming group that's kind of about to take center stage. So to be able to really see like a massive group of 26s stacked up, you know, side by side on a field with 27s, like they're not competing against each other, but you do get to kind of compare and contrast like the physical nature, the technique and all this stuff. So you start to kind of draw some conclusions on like what this class is going to be, you know, coming up.
Perfect. And ultimately, I think the bulk of our discussion here will be very focused on you know, the weekend that just unfolded, but quickly kind of to zoom out for maybe those that aren't super familiar with what Face-Off Academy is, when it was created, how it was created, or why. What would you say like the mission of Face-Off Academy is, and exactly that? Like, why did you go about it, when, those types of things?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's funny. So when we were still playing, I had just come off my ACL injury, and I had become close with Jerry just through Lax forums. And Jerry used to have an actual, like an epic mega thread about Face-Offs on. And I remember seeing like, who is this guy with new shoes on his carpet with his dog? He's actually giving pretty good advice. And then he reached out to me and asked if I would mind working with him, because he went to RIT and he wanted to have like a really good senior year. So he came to New York City, where I was just a strength coach at the time. And I worked with him in the gym. I gave him some pointers and stuff, and then he went back and had a really good senior year. And then I kind of just helped him with getting a tryout with Rochester, et cetera. And then through him, I met Chris Mattis, and the three of us became pretty good buddies. And one of the things that was starting to pop up was, you know, I was noticing online, I'm like, look, there's like no information about Face-Offs other than a bunch of dudes giving what works for them on Lax forums, or some random dude running around teaching cheating all over the country. So like, where are we going to actually give kids good information? Excuse me. And for the time being, when I was a trainer in New York City, a lot of my clientele would go to like the Hamptons or go away in the summer. So I was like, yo, why don't we just do like a bunch of clinics? And originally we thought, why don't we create like a Lax forums, but just for Face-Off guys? And that kind of went by the wayside. And Chris and Jerry really kind of pushed like, let's do a series of clinics, and specifically in non-hotbed areas. So our first event was in 2012 down in Delray Beach. And the idea was, we'll do 3 hours of training for high school kids. We'll do 3 hours of training for younger kids. We'll split it into two sessions, because no one had taught anything yet. So we're like, we got to like, excuse me, fit a lot in here. So we went down there, and then we did a series of clinics. And our emails were exploding. And then myself, when I wrote the training program for that, for the FOA, I had done it for the first time. I sat there as a face-off man and said, why don't I just use my knowledge as a strength conditioning coach, use angles and momentum and put all the same things that I would put into teaching an athlete an Olympic lift. And immediately I got better. So I came back from my knee injury and in 2012, I had a record-breaking year. And I was like, oh my God. And then every kid we were teaching this to was killing it. Right. So then all of a sudden, Face Off Academy was just kind of like, now it took up half our day. So we decided, okay, well, why don't we just do weekly clinics in the areas we're in? And we call them draw days. So we started doing draw days. And back then, if you remember, Dan, the clinic model wasn't really big in lacrosse. It was mostly all 4-day overnight camps.
Yep.
And we said, we're going to travel and do a clinic. Everyone's like, why would you do that? Like, it's not worth it. And we were like, no, because we can't give these kids 3 days of face-off knowledge. They'll pass out. So if we hit it hard and give them something like impactful, they'll start to learn and then we'll start putting content out. And then next thing you know, Ben Williams shows up at Syracuse and crushes it. Trevor shows up at Denver and crushes it. Every single guy we're teaching and coaching. And to this day, even guys who are, you know, claim to dislike us, they all got trained under the FOA banner as well. So, you know, I think there was something to it. And then all of a sudden the recruiting thing. And so it started as an idea just to like teach kids how to face off without cheating. And now our mission statement has completely changed. Now our mission statement is teach kids how to become well-rounded face-off guys, but also take the mentorship part of it really seriously because there's enough money grabs in lacrosse. Our thing is like, help these guys learn how to be young men. And then that's what the National Showcase came in because all these kids know of each other, but being under the same building for the first time, now they become friends. And this one unique thing, this weird thing that we do that nobody else understands becomes kind of like the glue to getting everybody together.
Totally. And Corey, I feel like that end of Greg's answer there, starting to talk a little bit about the recruiting aspect of things is a really good segue into you and your role. Talk a little bit about what that aspect of things is and, you know, exactly what you, where you like to, where you are able to chime in and kind of assert yourself as well.
Yeah. So my role was kind of born of me stepping away from coaching college across, where obviously a big part of that was, you know, coaching face-offs and recruiting face-off guys and getting to know Greg through that. And, you know, playing with him for just a very short amount of time, too. But Greg kind of realized that he was taking on a lot of, I think, what these kids are going through from a recruiting standpoint and not necessarily, you know, he could pick up the phone and talk to any coach about face-offs, but he doesn't know, like, the process, you know, or back then didn't. And, you know, wanted a resource to kind of direct kids towards one. So it cleared his plate and allowed him to, one, run the Face-Off Academy, and two, train his kids and stay in his lane from an expertise standpoint. Basically, I became a resource for kids, whether I was doing Zooms, one-on-one counseling, helping coaches kind of make connections and point them in the right direction for what they were looking for. So kind of being that go-between between not only the Face-Off Academy and you know, these kids, but the college coaches as well, just guys that I've had relationships with forever. So that's kind of where my role kind of was created. And, you know, obviously, starting to evaluate more kids, you know, like these college coaches do, kind of in that mold of, you know, being able to kind of have a conversation with somebody that knows, you know, not just one or two kids or one area of kids. It's, hey, I've seen kids from all over the country, and this is kind of who I see, this is who sticks out to me, that type of that conversation when I'm talking to a college coach.
Awesome. And so with all of that in mind, I guess it kind of has all now accumulated into what I would say is the premier face-off event in the sport, which is the National Showcase. And we're sitting here recording at a little bit after noon on Tuesday after the event. So with that said, there's been a little bit of time to decompress and to potentially absorb some stats and start to really identify who the staff felt really stood out, which classes really performed, and so on and so forth. So I'd love to kind of shift gears a little bit and kind of dive in to that actual National Showcase. And I guess to get into it, the very first question I have is how are players selected, or how do they register? Like who gets to attend the Face-Off Academy National Showcase?
Well, that's a good question. So we have to make sure that we're staying within the legalities of the NCAA calendar. So the idea was, as long as we did it in December, we had to make sure that any college coaches that were in attendance were being paid by us to be on our staff. So if you come to the national showcase, you're not just going to see a bunch of coaches with clipboards standing around. The concept was to hand select and invite college coaches that we knew for a fact not only valued the position, but also coached it at their universities, because we believe really strongly that kids need to be impacted by knowledge that's not just coming from the FOA coaches, but is consistent with what actually works. So we bring in and we invite a lot of college coaches that we have personal relationships with, that we know understand the position and want to coach it. And we say, look, not only being on our staff is going to help these kids learn, but honestly, it's also going to give you a very big advantage next year when the recruiting cycle comes. Because if I'm a kid and I'm sitting here going, oh yeah, I remember the Ohio State coach, Coach Vossler, like he knew his stuff when he was at the showcase. Like, I want to actually take a look at going there and learning from that guy. There's not a ton of Division I schools where there's a ton of face-off knowledge that you can progress once you get there. A lot of these schools, they expect you to get there and they expect you to be the man by the time you leave, but someone's got to guide you. So that's the first part. The second part is there has to be an open registration component. So how do we make that work? Well, we have almost 40 FOA coaches right now, and everyone's running their own weekly draw days. And the concept is, all these coaches are going to put in and say, hey, look, I got a kid who's in this class, this class, this class. These guys are dogs. We absolutely need to get them in there. Okay, cool. So we do kind of like an early invite night. In the middle of the summer, we send invites out. We say, hey, look, we're giving you first shot at signing up for this event. And that way, what we're getting is we're getting the cream of the crop. And then as the year goes on and the registration spots start to close up, we have the open registration there. But we really continue to take an eye out for guys that we've seen that have potential. And that's really what this is about. Anybody can go DM a bunch of kids who are already good and be like, hey, come take reps with me so I can claim that I coach you. But what we're looking for is we're trying to get the kids who have the potential to be great. And also, if you come to an FOA event, I mean, people just know at this point that there's a certain specific type of person that gets along with the FOA. If you do things the right way, if you're a dude who loses a face-off, but you admire your opponent, you're kind of our kind of dude. And we want those kids to be showcased. So once the invites go out, then it's an open registration. We get our 250 athletes. Now, we piecemeal it very specifically when the wait list starts. We have to be very intelligent about when kids drop out, adding kids to the right classes, because this whole event is based on group play now. It used to be years ago, it used to be very cutthroat, single elimination. So if you come to this thing, you train and everything, and then the tournament starts, you lose three face-offs, you were out. So now it's much more about group play. So you'll go, Dan, you register, you'll be put in a group with seven other kids randomly from all over North America. I mean, we had over 20 states, and we had a couple different provinces represented this year. So who knows who you could be in there with? But then you do a best of five against all seven of those kids. And then after your entire group does that best of five, then the winner, whoever has the best head-to-head matchup record, wins their group and advances to the single elimination. So you end up with the eight best dudes in that class battling each other. And then it gets really intense because then it's single elimination. So that's kind of how we do it. We do it for six different age groups. And then after the whole tournament's over, we have six national champions who go into what we call the champions round. And then they compete for the overall national champion, who was Ben Cuomo this year from Calvert Hall, who's headed to Yale. So you get your name added to the Academy Cup. So every year you see another name on there. So we got 12 legends on there, kids who went on and played at the highest level. And it grows from there. And our whole goal is for, we call it the Super Bowl face-offs, because we want kids to show up. And from the time they walk in the door, we want them to feel like absolute stars. So they get a massive gear bag. They get their photos taken. The cool thing for them is there's always at least one FOA coach they've worked with there. And now they get a chance to meet other FOA coaches. So like, if I work with a kid every day of the week and then he shows up to this, Corey might walk over, even though Corey trains the same system and uses the same lexicon, he might notice from a different angle something that I haven't seen before. And he can give a kid a little bit of advice that can take him to another level. And that's what's the coolest part about the event. But that's how we filter it all the way in to what we're doing.
Perfect. And then another question kind of along those lines, and you mentioned specific programming and teaching a specific technique and so on and so forth. How much, obviously it's competitive as it can be, how much of it is also a teaching-based event? And I'll go to Corey for this one. How much would you say the percentage is, you know, the guys are there, they're there to compete, they're working on, you know, beating each other up versus they're all there to get better?
Yeah, it's almost 50, you know, the night, actually probably more when you consider the night before there's a draw day, you know, the evening before. It's kind of a chance to for everybody to kind of get in, settle the nerves a little bit. They kind of get to know the space, they get to see who's there. You know, and again, like it's just another opportunity for them to come in and learn and kind of get in the groove. So, you know, when you kind of throw in that component, I think it was what, a 2 hour session the night before, Greg?
2 hours the night before, then 2.5 hours the next morning.
Yeah. And then, you know, the rest of the day is, you know, for however long it takes. But then, you know, like the way we did it this year with the pool play, your pool could be going and then you could be off for a little while. So it was probably more teaching almost than it was competition, which is the best part about it. Because like Greg said, even before this kind of pool play concept came into being, there were kids that would show up, we would do the training piece, and then the next thing you see is kid loses 3 reps and then they're gone. And you know, it gets quieter and quieter as the day goes on that way. You know, people start to kind of funnel out the doors. But now with the way it's set up, like kids will stay, they'll do reps on the side, you know, they're staying warm over on another side of the field while they're waiting for their pool to go. Like Greg said, there's 40 FOA coaches there, it felt like, and there's somebody willing to kind of stand, watch, evaluate a kid and engage with them and give them some feedback on what they're doing.
Yeah. And I think the key for us from a coaching standpoint, Dan, is you want to like our whole thing on that weekend is if I see you doing something that is absolutely detrimental and I know for a fact it's going to harm you, maybe your stance is just so out of whack that I can't not say something. But I don't want to overcoach you
Right.
because I don't want to there's some kids there's going to be like every year there's like 5 or 6 kids that we don't know that show up. And maybe their stances are completely wrong or something like that. But I also don't want to tell a kid something that's going to get in his head before he competes. So what we do is we kind of wait, right? Like say you show up with a completely backward stance and then you get crushed in group play. We have two coaches on every single field. It looks like a wrestling match. We have two coaches on every field and their job is to coach one of those kids up the whole time while they're on the field. And then after they come off the field, if you won, one coach is congratulating you, telling you what you did well. Maybe there's something that he noticed that you want to fix later. And then the other kid, it's like, okay, well, he raked you 3 times. Let's talk about why you didn't beat that rake. So then the rest of the group play that you can defend against that. So
Yep.
our job is to help you, but also sometimes, especially if a kid doesn't know you that well, you need him to experience that loss. So he'll trust you a little bit to know that you're not trying to hijack him or anything like that. You're trying to help. And the biggest thing for me really is because we have 7th graders, my biggest thing is I spend a lot of time around that field because some of these guys emotionally, they're not used to this kind of pressure and they
Yeah.
feel almost embarrassed when they lose. So it's very important to us that you put your arm around that kid real quick. Talk him down, explain to him. I actually had a kid who was kind of in tears when he got knocked out. And I explained to him the Griff Meyer story. Griff Meyer, 7th grade, was inconsolable when he got knocked out. And I said, I was like, a couple of years later, Griff Meyer came back, won this whole thing. And now he's going to his dream school at Virginia. So, you know, like, and then that's the type of thing you got to be on top of for these kids. Cause it can be, I know as an adult, how lonely that world can be when you don't perform up to your standard as a face-off guy. And there's not really a lot of sidelines that can help console a face-off guy when he's not doing well. So I want these kids to know you have a friend here. It's okay to not perform well, cause it really is about progression in long term.
Absolutely. And with all of that said, let's kind of dive into some standouts. I think one thing that is interesting that has already started to, you know, make its way through the Lax Rat rumor mill is the 2027 class really was impressive. When you guys think about the past few classes, how to you guys did that group stand out, and who were some of those 2027s that you thought kind of carried the torch?
Well, it's fun because we don't really know what we're in for yet until about this event with the sophomore class every year. You know, we're just kind of getting over the beatdown of recruiting season for the 26s, right? So we're still trying to get our feet under us. The 27s come in, and we also hold the I-95 Cup every summer, which is essentially the top 54 rising juniors competing on the same field. And all of those kids right now in their markets are trying to make that team. So I'm getting used to training these guys and I have an idea of what I'm in for, but then you just don't know exactly who's a dog and who's not. Corey, I don't know about you. Like for me, I always talked about being a face-off guy. If I went to a draw day or I was in practice, I wasn't a killer. I was analyzing, I was trying to get better, whatever, but I needed that adrenaline of it's game time to be able to flip my switch and perform my best. I love being able to see the kids who flip that switch and you're like, whoa, I didn't realize that kid had that gear.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I tell the sophomores every year, this is the first event that you can really start to get your name out there. Like it's a Heisman campaign for next year. Cause we've seen how this thing happens. Coaches don't quite understand face-offs next summer or spring. They start hearing four or five names and it's whisper down the lane at Phenoms or something. And then all of a sudden these coaches are obsessing over names that they have no idea who the kid is. So I say the same thing for these guys. You better be at the showcase because that's your first opportunity to have your name out there. I remember Ethan Goldberg last year won his class. Ethan yeah. Goldberg plays at Roslyn High School. Nothing against them, but that's not an MIAA or Founders League. The fact that he was on recruiting boards all year last year was because they heard his name around this time last year. So yeah, the 27 class is awesome. I don't know where it stacks up quite yet. I think the 26 class, at first, I think some of us thought it might have been underwhelming, but we're finding out that it actually was deeper than we thought. So the 27 class, I think, has a lot of athletic guys. Like we see some big dudes in the 27 class. What do you think, Cor?
Yeah, I think that's my biggest takeaway, just comparing like one field to the next, the 26s and 27 side by side. There are some really good sized kids, really good athletes in the 27 class, just in that small sample size. Obviously, there's 75 kids in that group. There's probably another 30, 40 out there that we didn't even get to see on this weekend. You know, and I think like Greg kind of hit the nail on the head. This is such a good opportunity for those kids to make a splash for a few different reasons. And just given what level of exposure the 27 class as a whole, not just the face-offs positions gotten, you know, from a recruiting standpoint so far, coaches are just dipping their toe watching, you know, they're turning their heads. They're watching a 27 game while they're still trying to watch, you know, 26s this fall. And, you know, some of the higher end ACCs that are, you know, quote unquote done with their 26 recruiting class, you know, maybe they've turned their attention fully to it. But, you know, as a staff, probably not entirely there yet. So a lot of times what's happening with these coaches is they're watching a 27 team, you know, in the fall and they're circling names. They're really not writing anything terribly, you know, descriptive about certain kids. They're saying like, all right, one, you know, we're going to build a very big list, whittle it down later. They're not getting, you know, too into the minutia of like who they like over one guy or a next. So when that happens, you know, it's a different type of evaluation. A coach isn't sitting down in a field saying, I know this face-off kid for this team is really good. I have to get a great look at him. They're just waiting for somebody to just pop. They go, oh, that's nice. Circle that, and then we're moving on. You know, that's obviously not how everybody's doing it, but you know, by and large, a lot of coaches are kind of formatting their fall that way. So, that being said, what happens when a kid scores a goal on a recruiting field in the fall? Everybody looks down at their notes. They start trying to figure out who just scored. What do they know about them? Oh, I just missed a faceoff. You know that. It happens all the time. It's just, even as a guy that was very in tune with faceoffs, you know, trying to recruit at the college level, found myself getting into that mode where I would, you know, I'd have a conversation next to the coach next to me and I'd miss a faceoff. And it's just kind of one of those things that faceoffs are very difficult to, you know, evaluate if you're not really, really locked in on them. So, you know, with that being said, like I thought this event, it has always been kind of like Greg said, really important for kids to just get their name out there initially, because there's nothing else going on, nothing that could detract from a coach's detention, a coach, what they're doing.
Yeah. I think there's two other things that help the college coaching process as far as recruiting at this. When you see the film is one, we bring the same referees back every year. And even during the debacle of COVID with the swizzle calls, we never strayed away from physical set call. So the kids come out and the referees every single time. We use college officials. The kids come out every time. They check their stick real quick with the three roll. They go down and it's a strict physical set call and we play to possession. So you're going to see guys using legal sticks for the first time, which might be jarring at first. And then you're going to see quality officiating, which is also going to be at a premium. So, you know, you have those two things right in front of you. So you're not sitting here going, all right, well, who's rolling the best? Who's leaning the best, et cetera. It's actually who's better at this, which is invaluable, especially if you're a college coach and you're like, I don't know what I'm watching out here. Because a lot of these events, they just roll a bucket of balls out there and they pay the ref to not care. So I think, you know, this is a valuable experience to actually compare apples to apples, which is pretty cool. And even though you're not going to get to see a kid in this, in the flow of a game, you're going to get to see if a kid's got the dog in them, right? So if you got the hand speed and you are willing to change, you can change your moves up and you're good at countering and you're a ground ball hawk, that's what you're going to learn here. And that's like 80% of being a good faceoff guy. Yeah, so, yeah.
To that point, I've thought about that a couple of, you know, through the years of like, how much do you learn versus seeing them in game situations? And it's like everything that you would see in a game situation comes secondary to the fact that like they have to win the faceoff first. Like nobody's going to recruit a faceoff kid because they sub well after they lose the faceoff, right? Like I don't think that's exactly what guys are going out there and looking for.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But to hit some specifics here, we had Finley McClintock won the 2027 class. What did he bring to the table that separated him from the field?
What's one of the most important things is your ability, because I'll have, you know, like I said, we vet our referees very hard and we expect them to do it the correct way or else they don't come back. But you can't create a sterile environment for faceoffs. One third of our success is your ability to adapt to an official. So with the kids who all have in common, the guys who win this thing in their class, they all have the ability to adapt to their referee because they're doing the faceoffs on the same field throughout. And, you know, your ability to adapt to a different official, but depending on which field you're on at what time, is huge. And I thought Finley really identified with that. The cool thing about him, too, is he's a big body. He has the ability to transition into a counter. And I think one of the things that's going to really separate guys moving forward at this position is that's great. You have a fast clamp, but those are usually going to be the guys that are going to let you down at some point, because just having a fast clamp, if I go against Corey on a day where he's slapping the whistle and his clamp's faster than me, am I just going to eat 25 faceoffs and we're going to lose the game? Or am I going to be able to change what I'm doing? And the cool thing about Finley is he doesn't have to win the clamp to win a faceoff. He's very good on the ground ball. And he battled like a gladiator on the 50-50s. It was awesome to watch. Didn't try to dive and draw a call. No palms up to the ref. Just was just a dog.
And Corey, again, like I wasn't there. I have no idea exactly how you guys go through the evaluating, what you're assigned to watch, what you get to watch, how that works out through the day. But to you in the 2027 class, like who would you say were additional standouts or who maybe gave him the biggest run for his money?
One of the guys that really, really stood out to me when we kind of decided we were going to hop on this call. One guy that really stood out to me, you were asking, was Dante Lamb, a Randolph High School kid. First time I had seen him, and I was standing there with a college coach, and I had just kind of turned my attention to his side of the field and saw one face off, and I went, like, kind of eyebrows go up, and I go, and the kid was all over the whistle the entire day. And I turned to the
guy. Hold on right there. Can you just don't forget that train of thought? I'm super curious from like a lacrosse fan, lacrosse, you know, face-off evaluator perspective. What is something that in one specific rep you could see that is going to make you have that reaction?
Watch a lot of his. No, I mean, first he's a good sized kid, and it's just, he's in a great posture coming off the whistle, and everything, there's like no wasted movement. It's in and out really fast. It's all very sudden, you know, again, like it's not like we're sitting there and it all kind of slows down in slow motion for us, but he just, if you could build a guy to, if you could show a kid one rep, be like, hey, this is what I want to get you to be able to do. You know, you kind of want your stance like this. You want to be, you know, lined up this way. And like everything he did was straight at the ball. And then his exit was excellent. Just getting it out. It was a super clean take, obviously against another really good opponent. And, you know, I kind of turned to the coach that was watching him, and I go, have you seen him yet? Like before this? And he goes, yeah, he's been like that all day. And you know, you watch the next five face-offs or whatever it was that he was taking, and it was like carbon copies of one another, just right down the line. He was all over the whistle, you know, again, like to Greg's point, I was hoping that I was going to see somebody in that phase, like when he was, you know, kind of getting rep after rep after rep, you know, you're in a rhythm. I wanted to see somebody kind of match that to see what his kind of response to that would be. And for two matchups, there really wasn't one. So, and then obviously kind of to turn my attention elsewhere and kind of keep moving. So he was a guy that immediately stood out, you know, and again, like some other names that I had heard kind of coming into it. Xander Brasher was another guy. He had a good summer as a 2026. Jackson Corlew, another Sweet Lax Florida kid who I had just heard through the grapevine coming up that he was going to be really good. He kind of was as billed you know, very strong in a lot of different aspects, but, you know, again, very high compete level. So again, like two guys that I knew a little bit more about ahead of time or kind of as build, you know, I think are going to be highly sought after from a recruiting standpoint in the next year or so. Gentry Curtis is another, he's a reclass from a very unique area, you know, kind of a kid that just kind of lacked a little bit of exposure. Oh, he's in the mix of some of those higher end 26s. Didn't quite land at a spot that he was hoping for, so he bumped back a year. He's incredibly, like, physically well put together. And, you know, Greg's worked with him a little bit as well. And then, you know, another guy that really stood out, got to look for his name here one second. It was, I'm going to say it wrong, Michael Beschel. Greg,
you got it. You nailed it.
Yeah.
Yeah, Long Island boy.
Yep, he's a little bit lanky, a little taller, but you know, you could definitely tell, like, after every rep, he's, like, limping around. He had something going on, you could tell, but, you know, his compete level was awesome. Even a little thing like that, like, you could tell that he was not comfortable. He was really banged up doing something between every rep, trying to stretch out. I think he had, like, a hip thing going on, but, you know, his compete level and his ability to still perform and battle. He wasn't just like going after a clamp and hoping he could win it. And then, you know, he'd just stand up and watch whatever happened. You know, like felt like he was ready to gnaw somebody's ankle off for a ground ball, even in the pain that he was in, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. You also had Tommy Leland. Tommy Leland's mad lax.
Yep.
Tommy's a very capable lacrosse player, not just face-off guy. He doesn't want to be considered a face-off guy.
Where did he faced off? I've seen him play.
And he's awesome at it. Yeah.
I saw him play for Gonzaga. Actually, I did at NHSLS, but it didn't even really register to me that he wasn't just doing it out of necessity for the day at NHSLS versus that he is legitimately takes draws. Wow.
Yeah, he has never come to the show. I mean, he's been to the showcase like four times so far, and he has never come here without winning at least his group. He's won his class before. He is a stud. I think when you ask like what jumps out, I think from a studied face-off guy who understands what he's watching, the best way I could put it to compare would be like, if you're watching an offensive movement and a guy just catches the ball deliberately off of a pass and just one motion rips the corner, nice tight shot. That's what we feel when a kid slaps the whistle and doesn't have any wasted movement and exits clean, right? As opposed to seeing a kid who like throws his feet back and he's in there for no reason, just kind of stalling around. So that's what Corey's saying. Like that movement for us, that's when we all kind of look at each other and go, that guy's got it. You know, like he's got what we can't teach. So that's awesome.
Perfect. And any other 27s, Greg, that you'd like to shout out before we move to the 2026 class?
I mean, we could go on forever because there was a lot of studs. One of the bummers was that Lawrenceville has two very talented 27 faceoff guys, Max Slattery and Aiden Bechet. And for whatever weird reason, they decided to schedule a random nobody scrimmage against Spalding on the same day as this event. And it could have been a massive deal for both of those faceoff guys. So hopefully we don't see a lot more of that in the future. But those are two guys I would have loved. They were supposed to come that couldn't. Harris Hatchers from Carolina, another one. You know, what's cool is, Dan, we had nine groups in the 2027 class. And the winners of those group came from eight different locations.
Oh, wow.
We got South Jersey and Jersey. We got the DMV, Kansas City. I believe Brandon is a Team America face-off guy, right, Corey? Where's Brandon from?
Brandon is from Minnesota.
Minnesota. He's on
a team with another guy that did really well, Will Harris.
Yes.
Another really good athlete as well.
Yeah.
A cross player just that also happens to face off too.
Yeah. So we had a whole bunch of dudes from different areas, which was awesome, indicative of the event, really. So 27 class is going to be, I just have a feeling it's going to be really deep.
And is that like geographical spread something that you could have been predictive of, or is that more surprising?
Just because we've done this long enough. I mean, look, all those areas, except for Kansas City where Gentry's from, but we've been to Kansas City a ton of times. Coach Rainey out there with Rockhurst have been out there. But all those areas that I just mentioned have a dedicated FOA coach that runs weekly training. So it's not a coincidence, but we expect there to be, we have 250 kids, you know, a Canadian won the 26 class. So it's just like, that's what we expect at this point.
Perfect. And that is an excellent transition. Becker Lippert headed to Colgate, won the 2026 class. What would you say, you know, is kind of the defining characteristics of his game?
I mean, Becker was trained up by Jake Withers. I mean, do we have to even talk any more about it? I mean, Jake Withers has been very instrumental in Becker's development. Becker's been to almost every event we've run out here for years. He's a box player. He's a total package lacrosse player. He's tough as nails, and he's got crazy hand speed. I mean, he looks like Jake Withers when he plays. He also works with Aiden Fern now, who goes up there a lot. He plays for the Haudenosaunee national team. I mean, he's been coming through the pipeline for years. Not that different than when we had Justin Inacio train with us for years and years, come all the way up through to Ohio State. So Becker's really, really good. And I think that he is so even keel that you can't even tell if he cares that he's there or not. Like, he's nothing rattles the kid. So Colgate hit an absolute home run with him. He's going to have a great career at Colgate.
Absolutely. And Corey, who were some of the 26s that kind of stood out to you as giving him the most run for his money, and guys that, whether uncommitted or committed, kind of stole the show? Were there any uncommitted gems there?
Yeah, there were.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I would say
we'll come back to Greg for that one. Sounds like he's got a good couple of
for sure, and I got one as well. And a guy that did really well in his pool, except that he was in Becker Lippert's pool to start the day. And again, tough luck of the draw, kid that I had some experience with before from Texas, Harrison Broach. I think he went 5-1 in his group play, like beat 5 other guys. You know, very sturdy, very solid face-off guy, good athlete with, you know, a little bit of everything, you know, not necessarily like the fastest hands, but also sometimes I feel like, to Greg's point earlier, if you've got all you got is hand speed, you're not too focused on what you got to do when somebody else matches that. And I thought he did a really good job of, you know, finding ways to win face-offs when it wasn't just super clean, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
And then one other guy that stood out that I had never seen before, but it felt like after every single whistle, whether he got a clean clamp or not, it just felt like he always got a guy on his back and boxed out and was able to come up with a ground ball like under pressure. Kid named Tanner Bird, I think he's from Colorado, but really physical kid, used a TTL exit back between his legs like almost every single time, which again, in this event, you got to play the drill you're in. Like, you don't need to pop the ball forward to go on a fast break. There's no goals being scored. This kid knew that, like, if I put it back between my legs, I have the best chance of turning around, getting this guy on my back, and I'm going to have, if I miss the first attempt, I probably get a second one, you know, as opposed to popping it out the front and maybe, you know, tripping over the guy that's diving down the line at me. So I thought Tanner was awesome. He's going to be interesting to see. Like, again, like, I had no experience with him. I don't know if anybody... I don't know, Greg, I don't know if you've ever seen him around before or not, but I thought he did a really good job. You know, I thought Charlie Boris is a big, you know, athletic kid from Ohio, definitely a little bit raw in terms of the technique and skill work stuff, but complete, like, just all out effort on ground balls and, you know, 50-50 play. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, the 26 class was a really good mix of committed and uncommitted guys this year. Robbie Johnson, Penn State commit, looked phenomenal early. He has a hammy he's trying to come back from, started to feel his hammy a little bit, and we shut him down. I know he wasn't happy about it, but someone's got to protect these kids for themselves because they'll grind themselves into the dust if we let them.
Yep.
But I thought the biggest winner of the 26 class was Angelo Capani. He's from Garden City. Not a lot of people heard about him. He was within one face-off of beating Becker Lippert in the final. He is a dog, super raw. Comes in, started training with me at the end of this summer, and I noticed it. You know, you can just tell when a kid's got it, and he has it. But we had to do a lot of work, and to his credit, he's been wide open to learning and changing his stance and developing technique and stuff like that. But you can tell the way he faces off. He's just faces off like a pit bull. I thought he was very impressive. Any coach that still needs a 26, this kid is a midfielder who's learned to face off at a very high level. So he's kind of like a home run recruit. And then we had a couple other guys, actually. Braden Kehoe is another really tall, really big, impressive, crazy hand speed face off guy from Long Island. He won his group as well. We had, who else here?
We had Braden this fall as well, and he was great.
He's awesome, and he's a great kid. You have Caden Hoffman. Caden Hoffman, Parker Hoffman's younger brother, is at Boys Latin right now. Has a really good clamp, but he also mixes in a very devastating rake. So, you know, and he's a little bit bigger and taller than his older brother.
Two.
Yes. And there's one kid too, we're talking about uncommitted guys. Somebody I cannot believe is still uncommitted is Alex Barbagallo. Alex Barbagallo from Connecticut, his brother Leo's committed to Brown. Alex's hand speed is as good as any other kid in that entire class. You know, he's not a physical beat you up type of kid, but he gets it done with his hand speed. So I thought all those guys were pretty impressive during the event. You know, they definitely did themselves some favors by showing up and competing at that at a high level.
Certainly. And let's go ahead and we'll shift into the 2025s. Greg, you've been hitting the analysis for our champions here, so let's stick with that. Ben Cuomo, an FCA Calvert Hall player, headed to Yale, won it for the 2025 class. What did stand out the most for you?
I mean, Ben, it's funny. We actually did a little tribute because his dad sent me 800 photos of us training him since he was like a bobblehead with Chase Mullins out on a random field when he was still doing knee down. An amazing family. We've gotten to know them so well over the years. Ben is just a great kid. He's definitely somebody that you want your sons around if you're on a, team. A phenomenal character. He goes about it in a very calm, studious visit. And we were talking about this every year when we have this event. We have a kind of an idea of what we're going to get, but you don't really understand the energy until all of the kids are collectively there. And
all when, their FOA gear and yelling. You guys put out a reel of him that literally from my own house, I was a little bit scared and a little bit motivated, which I would guess if you asked him like what the vibe he was going for was, it would be like, I'd like to scare him a little bit, but mostly motivate him. And he nailed that.
Yeah, Tommy Burke will just talk, and you just got to hold on for dear life. But what the only thing you got to stop Tommy from is he'll start taking live reps in the corner with a bunch of kids when he's supposed to be on a field somewhere. But other than that, Tommy's an absolute stud of a coach. But like when we get in that room, that first night we start training, and really it comes from the senior class. What is it going to be like? Sometimes you do have guys who are committed, but they're a little too cool for school. You might have some prima donnas in there. They're like, yo, can we just do the live tournament already? I don't have anything to learn. Not this year, dude. This class was so phenomenal. And it's all started with Ben. And Ben, like, you have the best kids in the 25 class ready to compete with each other. And you have one of the best face-off guys in the whole country is asking you about rakes. You know, when's the right time to use my quick rake or my top shelf rake? You know, if I do this, what? And you have all the seniors standing around witnessing that, right? So you have guys that are committed that are really want to get better, and it just trickled down. The energy was unbelievable this year. It was a total blue collar lunch panel type of group. And that's what Ben exudes. Now, in order to get there, he had to go through kind of a gauntlet. He ended up going against Cole Gibstein, who was last year's national champion. And Cole looked phenomenal. He's committed to Iona, and he looked absolutely, he was cruising at one point. He won a couple of matchups in a row, just like slapping the whistle, super clean exits. He was throwing in rakes. And then him and Ben battled together. So it was a really cool championship moment in the 25 class, watching last year's champion and now the new champion.
Yeah, a little bit of a dethroned type of a moment there.
Yeah.
All right, Corey, who were some of those 2025 standouts that when, you know, this time next year when you're getting ready to go and drive up to New Jersey for the 25 showcase, are you going to be thinking about, like, that kid was awesome last year?
Yeah, I think obviously Greg hit on Ben and Cole. You know, the guy that I thought did a great job too was Caden Fenno. Mm-hmm. Vermont commit. And, you know, again, like, he's a little bit undersized compared to some of those other two, especially, but great hand speed, super easy kid to be around and to coach. Like, he's asking questions. Like, I'm not like assigned to a field. I'm moving around, and like, he just walks right up to me, knew exactly who I was. Like, I didn't introduce myself to anybody. I'd met Caden before, obviously, but like, you know, he sees me, he comes by, he's like asking about something. Like right away, him. And I think that's the cool part about like those guys, you know, obviously the 27s, I think there's a, you know, a little bit of an anxiety about all this stuff to be evaluated, all that stuff, you know, everything like that. Same thing kind of moving into the 26s, these 25s, obviously they're there almost exclusively to compete. They want to battle. They want to you know, kind of make their name, which is pretty cool. And then, you know, I think Caden came just to like seriously get reps against the best kids, hopefully, that he could find. He's away at school now. You know, he's a Texas kid and he's away at school in Virginia. He comes up to get the best reps he can possibly get. And I think that's exactly what he got. You know, another guy that kind of had played as a 26, I think all summer, you know, and he chose to go in the 25 group at the showcase was Phil Minardo. He's really started to round into form. He's a super big, like he's a bowling ball. He's like a ball of muscle. It's crazy. He had a great summer, you know, playing as a 26 and, you know, another guy that's still uncommitted and that has the grades, comes from a great program. You know, again, he just needs, he needs to find a home, you know, at the right school. So I think he's another guy that performed pretty well.
Yeah. Phil's trying to climb out of that ACL, tearing your ACL the last game of your spring season last year, hole where he was like, all right, well, I got a reclass now. Came out 95, did awesome.
Yeah.
But now he's like, you know what? I'm just going to be a 25. I know someone's going to need somebody. Just going to trust the process. It was interesting. You talked about Caden Fenno, who's at STAB now. He's going to Amherst because he's a genius. And he, you know, the other Texas kid who came with him, Vance Flick is committed to Jewel. And it's always great because a lot of these guys on the Northeast, they're used to facing off against each other. They know all about each other. And then all of a sudden comes this lineman from Texas. Vance Flick shows up and almost wins his group. And he's just a big, tough, super, you know, strong, like lineman type of player. So he really stood out to me too. But those Texas dudes just always bring a different element. Everything's yes, sir. Thank you, sir. Love to be coached. And that kind of, I love that stuff. That's infectious. So yeah, that was really, that 25 class was very blue collar. I loved it.
A couple of really good 27s from Texas as well. Trip Bateman and man, I'm going to blank on him. I'm looking at my roster right now. Sorry, guys.
It's all right. No, I mean, Coach Hudson and Coach Luke Satt are really doing a great job in Texas for us. I mean, the talent that we've been pulling out of there for the last few years has been awesome.
Truett Force was the other.
Truett. Yeah, Truett. So Truett played really well. He was sick as a dog. And his dad didn't tell me until the end of the day. Because I was like, man, Truett's been pretty quiet. Apparently his dad was begging him like, dude, let's just gas this thing. He's like, Dad, we just came all the way from Texas for this. Like, we're not going back home, dude. So yeah, Truett's a dog. He comes every year. His parents are awesome. Yeah. So big, huge boy.
Yeah. Love it. All right. And as we get close to wrapping up here, we'd be remiss if we didn't shout out the 2030, 2029, 2028 champions. That was Lucas Chung, Russell Bogsik, and Chris Berardis. We obviously at IL Preps don't go all the way delving into those guys. But from like a general kind of a zoomed out perspective, do you have anything that you'd like to add from kind of the more youth perspective of things?
I mean, the 28 class is going to be special just based on the training that I've done the last year or so. I mean, you have – so Chris Berardis.
I guess I sort of misspoke because the 28s are starting to shift into that spotlight a little bit, at least for us.
So you have four champions in the 2028 group from a group standpoint. Chris Berardis and Colton Corpin play on the same team for primetime. You have Gus Chernik. All three of those kids are going to be on the same I-95 Cup team next in 2 years because they're all 28s from Connecticut, which is wild. Lone is phenomenal kid from New Jersey. He's absolutely going to be a September 1 phone call one day.
I think he's a BBL kid as well, in addition
to BBL kid.
Bulkin mentioned earlier.
Yes. So, I mean, in that pipeline through Jerry for years, like if you're a stud from Jersey, then you've been working with Jerry and it's awesome. So the 28 class was great. It's really cool to see the development because those kids are starting to get that little bit of puberty going and now they're starting to grow into who they're going to be. And it's really cool to watch. The 29 class was epic. We always laugh because on that field, you have one kid who's 5'11" and you have another kid who's 4 feet. And it's just like wild based on, hey, who got the luck of the draw that they hit puberty before Christmas. So, yeah, I mean, Russell Bogsik was phenomenal from Virginia. He's got a really bright future. He's a stud. Frankie Calabro, he's a Westchester kid, big, strong body. Everyone thought that he was a reclass. He's not a reclass, and he's not a sophomore. He's just gigantic. So, yeah, it was really cool. And then we had Kasdan from Arizona. So he came in and he won his group as well. And it was really, really cool to watch, you know, these kids meet each other and just start knocking heads.
Yeah.
Lucas Chun, his older brother, Ryan, Half Hollow Hills kid, really dynamic player himself. Lucas has been training with me in Long Island for a long time. That whole group, this was the first time, Dan, that we opened it up to younger than seventh grade. Because we have every year we have parents that are knocking down the door in sixth grade. Can I, my kid get in? So we said, you know what? Sure. We'll open up the sixth graders too. And we had that 20-30 class. It was pretty awesome. Those kids, I think we had 20 of them in that group, and they were killing each other. It was a really cool battle to watch.
And then I also saw that you guys had a speaker showcase. Is that the first that you guys have done that this year? Was that new or is that typical?
No, we do it every year. So we have two speakers every year. We invite one head coach, college head coach, to come speak to the parents because we think that there's a ton of value in having a Division I head coach speaking to you and being honest about the lacrosse process and what it looks like. What it looks like to be a Division I player. Everybody romanticizes what they see on Final Four weekend on TV. But to really describe what it's like to be a college athlete so that kids have a better understanding, explaining to parents, does my kid need to go to 37 showcases? You know, like that type of thing. What kind of men and people coaches are looking for, how important grades are. Hopefully a Division I coach saying that hits a kid a different way. And we had Coach Turi this year from St. John's. And then we bring in Will White. Will White played for Dan Citrone when he was in college. And they have a great relationship. We invite Will White because, believe it or not, Will White works for Mattress Firm. And his job is he goes all around the country and he goes into stores and regional different offices and he hypes the employees up. He's a literal professional hype man. And he's part of our family now. He comes in every year and we just tell the kids, okay, we're going to break for lunch before the tournament. Here's Will White. Just sit back and enjoy. And by the time Will's done, I've never seen parents that just like that fired up. So we have to feature a reel of him every year because we're like, yo, look at what this dude does. Just sitting there watching the screen doesn't do it justice. But yeah, so that's our crew because we try to bring a little bit of everything at the showcase.
Perfect. All right, guys, we are approaching that hour mark, and this has been really fun. I feel like we were able to hit some standouts, talk a little bit about FOA. What else do you guys have before we wrap up? Any other closing thoughts? Anything that you feel would be pertinent for the listeners?
Sure. We are about to announce our dates for our overnight camp next summer. Our I-95 Cup tryout process will be this spring for the 27th. And we have a massive announcement from an online coaching standpoint coming within the next week. So we're really excited about what we got going on over here for sure.
Perfect. Keep everything rolling. I think from our perspective, as in terms of IL and my perspective, just as a fan of the game, I think that these things, these organizations like yourself, and I'd put Goldiesmith in that group as well, that do just a really good job of cultivating a specific niche and making it more than a position, but kind of a family and a community is really impressive and something that we here at IL just really have a ton of respect for those types of organizations.
Thanks, Dan. Really appreciate that, man.
Absolutely. And again, we look forward to, I hope to get to one in myself in person soon, whether it's a 95 or a national showcase, but that will happen at some point. And until it does, we'll just keep recapping like this.
I love it.
You can come with me.
Yeah, we'll to pick me up. All right, guys. Thanks so much.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.